Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we take three calls from one listener.
That's right. You might even call him the king of Suburbs Pod.
Okay, Patrick, before we get started with today's episode proper, I do want to bring up the cicadas again. Brood X. Or Brood
That's
10.
Right.
Brood X?
Yep.
Brood X must be.
Uh-huh.
17-year cicadas. So first thing I want to say is they're supposed to hit like any time now. I think there's been some sightings where you are in
yes.
Falls Church,
oh.
Northern Virginia.
Oh, yeah, a lot of them. A lot of them, yeah.
Bill Mulligan posted a photo I saw. I haven't seen them here yet where I am, a little bit farther out from you, but I assume it's going to happen.
Yeah, it's the weather. I think it's the warming of the soil. When the soil warms to a certain temperature, then they're ready
yeah.
to go.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I was doing some gardening about 2 weeks ago, and I dug down a little too deep, and I woke up one of these cicadas, and he was like, dude, I just slept for like 16 years, 11 months, and 2 weeks, and you brought me out of it
right.
2 weeks early. Not
right,
cool.
Right. Like the alarm didn't go off yet.
Right.
Hit snooze. Like I mean, he wants to hit that snooze
button.
I had
two more weeks.
That's right. That's right. I know. So two things I want to say is one, first of all, like how did these cicadas decide on 17 years? Like was there like a meeting and they got together and said, that's the right number. Like people threw out different numbers.
Right.
And, like how many years should we you know, live underground or hibernate underground? It's like 16 feels too short, but 18's kind of long. 17. Let's put the difference. I don't know what it was. So then there's that. And then also listener Barrett Reese posted something on Facebook the other day with like a warning that about dogs eating cicadas.
That's right. Yeah.
So initially what I heard was that it's okay for the dogs to eat them, that it's like a natural thing and it won't really do them any harm.
Right.
But according to this, posting Barrett put up, that is somewhat true, although if they mm-hmm. eat too many they can get sick
like anything. I think
right.
that's right. Yeah, Tony Paco's hot dogs or whatever.
Yeah, that's right.
You can't
that's
eat
right.
too many of them.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
And I'll tell you that they are, you know, like the younger dogs especially are just like what's that food, I'll eat it, you know, so you got to watch out for that. You
well,
really
this
do.
Was This was the line that caught me in the little warning thing. It said something of the effect of, if your dog lacks impulse control. And I was like, what? What dogs have impulse control? I want to meet those dogs. I don't know. My dog absolutely fits the definition. My dog's Shadow fits the definition of lack of impulse control. There is, well, you've met Shadow and whatever he wants
oh,
at
my
that
God.
Moment.
He'll be eating him by the mouthful.
Yes,
yeah.
That's right. So we're not, he's going to, we may have to limit. So the advice was
you're
limit their,
go outside with him. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, limit their unsupervised outdoor time if they uh-huh. lack impulse control. So
that's right.
The show is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
Okay, let's get into the listener correspondence today.
Very good.
Another fan mail episode. And this is what's different. I don't think we've ever done this before. We are featuring one listener who has called, I mean, other than the EPJ stuff we've done, one listener who has called about three different topics.
Wow.
All right. So that'll be fun.
That's amazing.
Yes. So that listener is Harris King down there in South Carolina, and he called three separate times to talk about three different episodes that we have recently produced, and so he gets like a special spot on the wall, I think, the Wall of Fame here. And
yeah.
Let's see. Here is his first call.
Hello, Rockin' the Suburbs. This is Harris in South Carolina. Calling about the last two episodes about game theory. Holy moly, Patrick. This is amazing. I don't know what to say. I'm a huge Mitch Easter fan, a huge Let's Active fan, but I didn't really know about game theory. And I think a lot of the other listeners of the podcast are in the same boat. I listened to the second episode this morning, and I have since been listening to Game Theory all day long. They're on the streaming which is great. And I started with the four Mitch Easter produced albums, Real Nighttime, The Big Shot Chronicles. I'm currently on Lolita Nation. There's so many bonus tracks on these as well. They're all great too. I don't know what to say except it's great, and I'm glad I'm listening to it. I'm glad I've discovered it 40 years too late or so. You know, they say that as you get older that you have a hard time connecting with bands the way you connected with bands when you were 14 years old, or bands when you were in high school, or bands when you were in college. However, there's bands you should have connected with at those times. And when you hear them, immediately the connection is there. And this is one of those occasions. So I'm listening, and will continue to listen. I'll go check out the Omnivore page because it's wonderful that all these things have been re-released and go from there. So thanks a lot. I look forward to hearing from other listeners about Game Theory as well. Keep rocking the suburbs.
All right, there you go. There's Harris talking about Game Theory and how you turned him on to this band.
Yeah, amazing. And I think Harris said it right. Like, when you're a fan of a person or a producer, Mitch Easter, R.E.M., you know, all that sound, sometimes these things just happen, you know, where the currents don't mix and the angles don't match up and the times, you know. I mean, think of how many bands grunge swept away accidentally when the right bands were actually doing good stuff. And it wasn't that dramatic, but Scott Miller was just one of those understated guys. And it's interesting, like, hearing from people about these episodes. And we're going to try, I got to tell you, folks, we have some good ideas to try to do more of this stuff where it really hits us. And we feel it. And can also add some history and some narrative, you know, based on our backgrounds in, as journalists. So it all makes sense, right?
Yes.
But that's the reward, I think, to me, Jim, is just it's worth the effort and the research and the interviewing. And also, you know, can you turn someone on still at this day and age, right? Remember those moments when you played a record for somebody and they really got it? Like, that was the fun thing about being a music fan. So it's great that we get to do that. And I'm really glad that that Harris is into it. And I hope he passes it on to someone else.
Yeah, totally. So, okay. So that was call number one from Harris.
Thank you, Harris.
This is his second call to us.
Hi, guys. This is Harris in South Carolina. I was calling to comment on a fairly recent episode. It was one of the new music episodes last month, which is, we're now in April, so I guess it was the March New Music. And it was sort of a throwaway comment from Patrick. Timothy Hoffman, I think, had called in about a new Daniel Lanois song. And Patrick was like, yeah, that's cool, Daniel Lanois. And I think his brother produced this band in Canada, I think Hamilton, Ontario, called Simply Saucer. And Patrick described it as, krautrocky, but very unknown. So I looked them up, and they're actually on the streaming services. They have a compilation called Cyborgs Revisited. So I was able to listen to it. It's amazing. First of all, he said krautrock, which piqued my interest, so I checked it out. And that's definitely true. They're great, but it reminds me a lot of 60s, 70s Detroit sort of Stooges type rock and roll. It's amazing. I really love the song Illegal Bodies. The parts 1 and 2 of Here Come the Cyborgs are great. They do a Velvet Underground cover. It also sounds like some Velvet Underground too. It's amazing. It reminds me a lot of the band Sonic's Rendezvous Band, which is a Detroit supergroup from the 70s that never really put out official releases. But they have this box set that came out in 2006 called Sonic's Rendezvous Band Box Set. And it's just all a bunch of live recordings around Detroit, Ann Arbor, or whatever. But it's a Detroit supergroup. With Fred Sonic Smith in there of the MC5, Scott Ashton of the Stooges is in there, and a couple more Detroit rockers in this band that I really love. And their song, City Slang, is one of the greatest rock songs ever written. I'm sure you and many of the listeners are familiar, but, so I'm not listening to new music much this month because Patrick first mentioned Game Theory, or did the two-part series on Game Theory, so I've been going through their catalog, and it's amazing. I called in about that a little while ago, or several days ago, and now Simply Saucer as well, even though I think the Simply Saucer episode was before Game Theory. Just amazing stuff. So, as I've said before, music's out there. It's floating in the ether. Even if you missed it 30, 40, 50 years ago, you can still pick it up, and it sounds as good as it.
All right. He kind of got cut off there by our recording. But anyway, you get the idea there. So Simply Saucer was a band that you just sort of briefly mentioned, I guess, and it caught his attention. Yeah.
Yeah. Something that Hoffman had mentioned, I think, got me started on Simply Saucer. An amazing band, as Harris described it. And I want to tell everyone right now, we didn't plan this, Jim, but if you don't mind, give me a second here. Harris and I will be moving in together and merging our record collections. So we're having a spring wedding. It's going to be fun. No, it sounds like our sensibilities are right in line. And of course, I came from Ann Arbor, Michigan. That's where I was born. It's going to be fun to talk about Sonic Rendezvous Band. I mean, they were just like a super group, man.
Right.
You know, we're like the best guys. We're like, hey, let's play for a little while. You know, what else are we doing? It's 75. It's been a little while since some of our bands were underappreciated. But, you think about the Stooges and the MC5, of course, and then you get a couple other good players and you put some stuff together. Man, it's a badass record. And I love that what Harris added, Jim, to Simply Saucer about that, proto rock and roll, that proto punk, hard rock and roll.
Shame breaks.
I'm so glad that some of those offhanded comments
I know.
Make sense. And my wife doesn't appreciate it because I just ramble all the time. But anyway.
That's why you do this, right?
That's right.
There's someone out there who gets me. Yeah.
Thank you, Harris. So,
all right. This is call number 3 from Harris King.
Hi, everybody in the rockin' the suburbs world. This is Harris in South Carolina. Super excited to be calling in today about the Vulgar Boatman. What a great episode. Jim, what a great description of who the Vulgar Boatmen are in the amazing album, You and Your Sister. To use a baseball metaphor, you have Hall of Famers, of course. They're great, great baseball players. But then you have players like Willie Mays and Hank Aaron and Babe Ruth and their inner circle Hall of Famers, they call them. So You and Your Sister is definitely an inner circle album for me, one of my all-time favorites. It's up there with the Silos Cuba, which you talked about, of course, that there's a Walter Salles Humara, a Silos, and a Vulgar Boatman connection. Just amazing story, complicated, but works for some reason. I discovered the Vulgar Boatman through the Silos after listening to them in the late 80s and was immediately hooked. And then the Gainesville story and the Indianapolis story just added to that. Me and my friend Baker were both Silos and Vulgar Boatman fans, and we would listen to them all the time in the dorm room there at Wofford College. In fact, one of the people we went to school with there, she is from Gainesville, and she grew up right next to Robert Ray of the Vulgar Boatmen. And in fact, babysat Robert Ray's daughter, Margaret, who of course is the Margaret and Margaret Says on You and Your Sister. And she's also the Margaret of the song Margaret on the Silos Cuba. Just amazing stuff there. You know, I've never got to see them live. They really weren't touring very much, but they do a January show every year at Shuba's in Chicago. I haven't made it up there yet, but my friend Dave, who lives there, I made him go one year, and he thought it was amazing. So very cool. My wife Rachel and I have a song that's special to us, Drive Somewhere, because when we first started dating, we lived a couple of states away from each other, so we had to do a lot of driving to see each other every weekend. So Drive Somewhere definitely fit with that. And last point, as you mentioned, you know, it's amazing they did a reissue, a 25-year reissue of this album for an album that didn't sell a whole lot or is not even that well known. And to go along with that, that same year in 2016, there's a New Yorker article about the album. It's called An Obsessive Listen to a 25-year-old Album. Yeah, go find that article in the New Yorker. Otherwise, I implore all of the listeners, go listen to You and Your Sister. Go listen to the second album, Please Panic, as well. It's almost as good. It's a classic as well. And maybe I'll have to read the book Patrick mentioned, You Don't Love Me Yet. That's pretty cool, too. All right, guys, keep rocking the suburbs every day. Bye.
I'll tell you this, Jim, I got really obsessed with that Vulgar Boatman album. I didn't know much about it if you listen to that episode, and it's so good, folks.
That's cool.
I mean, it just combines a lot of really amazing things. And
well, I'm very happy. I had a feeling Harris would know this album, yeah, because I know he's a huge Silos fan, and there was right. So there was a connection there. So I'm like, if any of our listeners would know the Vulgar Boatman, he's right. Probably one of them. And I think
I think a
couple of our Midwestern listeners were familiar with it as well. But
it's
one of those records, and it's kind of like, you know, introducing people to Game Theory or something like that. It's like one of those bands and records that that didn't, you know, because of circumstance or whatever, like just wasn't exposed to a lot of people. But
right.
It seemed like the people who picked it up or listened to it liked it so much that it's one of those you feel like, God, I'm only in some other world, this could have been a big hit record, right? You know what I mean? So thank you again to Harris for that. I love that you're so into the show that you want to comment on these different episodes. That's wonderful. All right, let's get out of here. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
We'll talk to you all later.
There was a band that came out of San Francisco called Chrome. And if you don't know Alien Soundtracks by them, Simply Saucer plus Detroit plus, you know, maybe a little futuristic electronics and just a band that tore stuff up.